Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back, and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of China this time. I have a special guest with me on this podcast that I'm really excited to have. He's been on our podcast before. He's been a really great friend together with me and Back to Jerusalem. He's been with Back to Jerusalem since the 90s. He's one of the very first board members for our organization when we started the organization. He was also the chairman of the board for Back to Jerusalem. We are so excited to have him back on. Ivan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for joining us for this Back to Jerusalem podcast. It's exciting to have you on here, but it's also a sad event that brings us together for this podcast.
Yeah, my good old friend, Lauren Cunningham, he got another stamp in his passport. Heaven.
Yeah, he did. For those of our audience that don't know, Lauren Cunningham passed away last week. He was the founder of one of the most well-known Christian missionary organizations for youth, known as Youth with a Mission, YWAM. And I believe he was from Hawaii, and he passed away in Hawaii, but you knew him for many years, isn't that correct, Ivan?
Yes, I met Lauren first time way back in 1971. That was 1 year after he moved to Europe, and that was really the international start of YWAM. And I brought with me a bunch of young people, about 30, to a conference in England. And there, Lauren came by, so I met him and connected with him. That was our first meeting.
And then from there, can you tell us how it kind of progressed? Because as I understand it, you founded YWAM for Norway, or is that correct?
Yeah, actually, we had started a ministry of evangelism in the late 60s. So we were training young people, doing street evangelism, and this was the group that I brought with me to the conference in England. So when I connected with Lauren, you know, we got to talk a little, and Lauren invited me to come by Lausanne, Switzerland. That was the first YWAM base in the entire world. So next year, in 1972, I traveled for about 3 months ministering and preaching and teaching in Asia. And on my way home, I decided to stop in Lausanne. So I spent about a week there at their training center. And so I got to spend a lot of time with Lauren. We shared notes, and I shared what we were doing in Norway. And then Lauren said, you know, what you guys are doing in Norway, this is exactly the vision that we have in YWAM. So he invited us to bring that ministry into YWAM. So I was a little cautious. I said, well, if we do that, what are the strings attached? And he said, no strings attached. Our job is to serve you. And that was showed some of his heart, generous, inclusive. So in the summer of 1972, we took the ministry that we were doing and became part of the YWAM internationally, which opened up a whole new area for us. I mean, we were a national ministry, and all of a sudden we became part of a growing international movement.
I mean, you know, you talking about flying to Asia and then stopping off in Switzerland, that sounds like a regular missions itinerary for 2023. But you know, many of our listeners don't really know that in the 1960s, you didn't just go on to Expedia.com and book a flight. You didn't, you know, just go online and book a hotel at Holiday Inn. You didn't send email. There was no mobile phone, so you weren't, you know, calling or sending texts or sending a WhatsApp message to Lauren. How did you connect? How did that whole, you know, thing take place where you're reconnecting and connecting? You know, he's moving around, you're moving around, so you don't have stationary phone numbers, I assume. Can you just share a little bit about the faith that you had to have in order to connect with one another in the 1960s?
Yeah, it was a completely different world. You know, there was no backpackers traveling the world. The backpackers in those days here in Europe were just on Interrail, just going from one country to another in Europe. So the way it opened up for me was an American evangelist. He was actually conceived in Norway, born in America. Became a lawyer, then he got saved and studied theology, became a Lutheran pastor, and he was filled with the Spirit in Dennis Bennett's church in St. Luke's Church in Seattle in the early days of the charismatic renewal. But he was then kicked out of the Lutheran church, and he started a ministry, Murad Evangelistic Association. So he came to Norway, and I met with him, and I became his interpreter in Norway. And then he invited me, because every year he traveled around the world doing ministry in many countries, and he invited me to join him in 1972. And he said he would cover all the costs, and he had all the contacts. So that was quite an offer. So I remember I was going to be gone three months, so I had to give my wife three addresses where she could send letters, but she had to send the letter 1 month before I arrived.
Wow.
But when I got the invitation, I told him, I'm sorry, but I can't go on this trip. Because, you see, my wife was pregnant, and she was going to give birth while I was in Asia if I went on the trip. So I told my wife, I can't go. And my wife looked at me and said, "This is the Lord. You go." And wow. Then I learned to submit to my wife. So actually, when I was in Indonesia, my oldest daughter was born. But I didn't find out till 1 month later when I came to Sri Lanka. A letter was waiting for me telling me that I had been father to a girl.
Wow. I mean, just completely unheard of today that yeah, you know, you wait for a month before you know whether, you know, and even that was speedy delivery. I have just spent time this year writing a book about the life of Robert Morrison. It's the first biography of Robert Morrison that's been written in over 100 years. So I wrote a biography. It'll be out next month. And that biography, you know, he had individuals in his family die that he wouldn't know about for months. It took him over a year to go from England to China, just to travel there. I mean, now I can actually leave from I can leave from Hong Kong and fly to California and arrive 1 hour before I left. So it really is a completely different world. And so missionaries like you that were doing missions, like you and Lauren Cunningham were doing in the 1960s and 70s and even into the 80s, there had to be a lot more planning, and in some cases, just from what you're saying, faith to be able to, you know, connect with people along the way.
Yeah, it was a completely different day. You know, I remember in India when to buy an air ticket, you know, you had to order the ticket weeks in advance, and it all had to be done by mail. So it. And I remember while we were in India on this trip, my friend, mirrored. He was he needed to make a telephone call to America, which was quite an ordeal. So he had to go to a telegraph station and apply for some time. And finally, you know, he got the time and he had to go into a booth and was called up and you had this crackling line. But it was quite an ordeal.
Yeah, well, I mean, even in the 90s, which is, you know, we're talking 20, 30 years later, even in the 90s when I was in the military and we would do operations abroad or we would go to other places like Hawaii or places like that. When I traveled, the only real communication I had in the 90s when I was in the military traveling around the world was letters. So I sent letters yeah. and then people could send letters to my unit in California, and then they would fly those by into a nearby base, and then from the nearby base they would need to put them on a helicopter and fly them to the ship. And there were times that those letters got dropped in the ocean on the way in, and that was just everybody was super sad because that's an entire month of communication gone down the drain. And in Hawaii, this in the 90s, in Hawaii, when we were based out of the Kahukus, you had to go to the store, to the base store, and buy minutes on a card. And then you had to go to the phone bank and wait in line from all these desperate and lonely Marines that wanted to call home. You had to wait in line. And sometimes those lines were like 3 or 4 hours long to be able to have a 10-20 minute conversation. And if you didn't want to wait in a long line, then you could wake up at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning and go to the phone bank. And then there might be, you know, a phone available without having to wait in line. Completely different to now. I have the entire world. Like if somebody says a word that I don't know, I can Google it on my phone. Oh, well, it's even better than that. I was in the Netherlands a few weeks ago, and I got 4 speeding tickets. And they sent me my speeding tickets in the mail, and it was all in Dutch. And I just took my phone and pointed at the paper of those speeding tickets, and my phone interpreted all the words on that paper, you know, which all I had to do was point my phone at the paper. That's a completely different world today than the one you're talking about.
Yes.
Having to order.
But on my way home from that trip, I stopped in Lausanne and, you know, I had 1 week with Lorne there. And that's when we really connected and I got a heart relationship with him.
When we look at, you know, YWAM and what it became, can you tell us a little bit about that first base in Luzerne? What made it special? What was different about that training center than other missionary training centers or Christian training schools that you had seen up to that time? What made it special?
I think there were two aspects that really were Lorne broke through into new territory. And it was the concept of young people as missionaries and short-term mission. And he met a lot of resistance on both issues. Young people? You mean young people can be missionaries? And short-term mission? I mean, mission to be a missionary is a life calling, you know. So there was a lot of uphill struggle, but those were the cores. And the whole thing, it came out of a vision Lorne had in way back in the 70s, where he had a vision where he saw big waves rolling up on the shoreline of all the continents of the world. And all of a sudden he saw that these waves turned into young people. And he saw, you know, that God will use young people in a way they had not been used for years. But actually, I think, you know, Lorne really understood some basic biblical principles. Because, you know, when you look at, I think of the disciples, And you see that famous picture of at the Last Supper, you know, with Jesus sitting with the 12, the famous painting. You see all the disciples as very old men, but that's not true. When Jesus called the disciples, they were young people, probably the late teens and maybe early 20s. So when he sent them out as apostles, they were only 3 years older. So God has always called young people. He has always used young people. And this is the vision that really got a hold of Lorne Park. And so the training base in Lausanne became a training center for young people for evangelism. And they started the school they called the School of Evangelism. That was the first base, and it took off from there. Now they have over 1,000 bases, I think, all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the statistics of YWAM online. It could be correct. It might be a little bit off, but according to the website that I'm looking at now, it says that they train 25,000 evangelists or young people that want to be evangelists, 25,000 annually. They have over 11,000 staff stationed in 130 countries. That is pretty amazing. And when you look at that, the majority, it says that over 50% of the 11,000 full-time staff are non-Western, which is pretty amazing, considering the idea of their motto, which is to know Christ and to make him known.
Lorne had the concept which he coined in this phrase, from everywhere to everywhere. And so I noticed from the very beginning that he had a real heart of getting people from non-Western countries into leadership and see them released. And this was a unique gift that Lorne had to releasing people. He had the ability to, when he met people, he recognized the calling. He then challenged them. He supported them. And he released them into ministry, walked alongside them. But then he often saw people who had been released, they got into ministry, often a little over their head. And then they looked for Lorne, but then he had already left. He was releasing some other people, some other place. And you had that multiplication taking place. So he would meet with people like in faraway places, people who were isolated maybe, and who didn't have an opportunity to use their calling and their ministry. I think of just a lady like Joy Dawson, who became very internationally known. She was stuck in New Zealand. She came from a church where women were not allowed to teach or speak. Lorne met her, and I think the late 60s, and he recognized that she had a unique anointing when it came to intercession and to teach on intercession. So he opened the door so she would get an international network, and she got an international ministry. You know, I think of Kalapi Moala from Tonga. When Lorne went to Tonga in the early 70s, he met this young Tonga man. I mean, who had heard of Tonga? He was stuck in this little island kingdom in the Pacific. But Lorne recognized that this is a man that with an anointing and a calling, and Lorne opened the door so he were able to minister all over the world. So he had a unique gift of meeting people, recognizing God's hand on them, releasing them into ministry, and just let them take off.
I mean, back to Jerusalem, we can so identify with that
vision and that way of doing things, because I mean, in so many ways, it's the same vision of completing the Great Commission that God has given to the Chinese Underground House Church.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the two are connected, but I'd be curious to hear your view. This year, a great movie came out, which is dear to for me. It's called The Jesus Revolution. And it's about the starting of Calvary Chapel in California. Now, I did not grow up in a Christian home. I became a believer when I was 14. And probably the individual that played one of the biggest roles in my life was Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. And so I remember going to that church for the very first time in the 90s and just being blown away because I'd heard his voice on the radio so many times and kind of set my foundation of my understanding of the faith. And out of that revolution, whenever I see a revival, especially a revival of young people, I always see a desire to have an expression of missions. And I wonder if those two are connected in any way, where the revival was happening in California and other places as well, and with young people, and then on one side, and then on the other side, you have this revival of young people going to missions or having a hunger for missions. And it felt like YWAM was helped facilitate that in some ways. Do you think those two are connected in any way, or not?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah,
I think that if you a revival will always lead to a heart for mission. Those two are completely connected, and I think also in the early days of YWAM, the whole in the late 60s, the early 70s, this was the time of the days of the Jesus Revolution, a lot of YWAMers came out of the hippie movement. But I remember Lorne, he said something that I didn't quite understand at the time, but I think I understand it better today. He said, "Ivan, don't be afraid of the young people. Don't be afraid of the young people." And also the statement, it's easier to cool down a fanatic than to warm up a corpse.
Oh, I love that.
And young people have this zealousness, you know, that they can do things, they can go get a little overboard, but that's not dangerous. You can always cool it down a little. But if you go into a dead church and you try to blow life into corpses, you know, that's a hard task. I think, you know, with Chuck Smith, you know, he was able to see the potential, even though these hippies that came into his church in those early days, they were not exactly like his church members. While many churches, they closed their doors because the new believers, the hippies, the young people, they didn't fit into the pattern of the church. He opened up the door and, of course, was heavily criticized for that. But that opened up for life and development.
It's interesting that you said that, you know, there were a lot of the hippies that kind of became a part of YWAM, because even now they still seem a little bit of that spirit. There seems to be that spirit there. I mean, YWAM is kind of colloquially as a joke known as youth without money, because many of them will show up like at an airport without tickets. They will, you know, go and serve in areas without, you know, any real financial support, believing that the Lord will provide and the Spirit will lead. So that connection that you've just made is an interesting one.
Yeah, it's really YWAM has really become a place where you can develop spiritual muscle that's the way I like to put it. You have to get out on a limb. Lorna wrote a book, Living on the Edge, which describes it very clearly. You know, we like to be secure. We like to have everything in place. Before we want to get involved in a project, we have to want to have it financed. We want to have security. But in YWAM, you know, you're challenged to go beyond your resources, beyond your ability. And when you get that far, you know, you have only one you can trust, and that's the Lord. So therefore, you have so many miracle stories. And you know, the whole issue with it, just with finance, you have to learn to trust the Lord. So YWAM has really, by the whole nature of the ministry, been a training for faith.
Do you have any special stories or memories of when the two of you traveled of seeing God's supernatural provision, or seeing things that you just can't explain, or miraculous events that took place while traveling around with Lauren or with the team of YWAM?
I remember, it's a little different angle maybe, but I remember one time I was with Lauren in Copenhagen, and this was in the early 70s, and we've had several meetings together, and I was to drive with somebody who were going to drive from Copenhagen and through Sweden and up to Oslo, because next morning or around noon next day I was supposed to speak at a meeting in Oslo. So in the afternoon, Friday afternoon, I tell Lauren that I had to leave, and Lauren told me, "But Ivan, why don't you fly to Oslo in the morning and you can spend the evening with me? We could at the meeting tonight." And I said, "Well, it's so costly to fly, and I get a free ride, you know, if I drive all night." And then Lauren looked at me and he said, he gave me money for the airfare. And he said, "I would rather save God's man than God's money." And I learned a lesson that you know, to have the right priority. And so Lauren always led and taught by example. And I remember way back in 1973, this was in the early days of YWAM, when they were starting a training school, and it was actually in Hawaii, and they were waiting for the ship Maori, because Lauren had a vision for a ship ministry. So they had purchased or paid the down payment for a ship Maori in New Zealand, and they were waiting for the ship to arrive, and they started the training in Hawaii waiting for the ship. The ship never materialized, but that's another story. But then Lauren invited me to come out and join them. So I was in California at the time, and I flew out, and they had very poor living conditions. It was like a YWAM, not like a YMCA camp, very primitive cabins. And when I came, Lauren had a cabin a little bigger. But then he said, "You can have my cabin." So I moved with my wife and two kids, and Lauren just took the smallest cabin there, and he was willing to sacrifice. It was not comfort, but a sacrifice on space, just to be a servant. So he led through the example of servanthood.
Wow. I mean, it really does give testimony to why God used him in the way that he did. As such an amazing, such amazing stories, as well as, you know, the outcome of the visions that God gave him. I mean, we see that YWAM is everywhere. It's really impact a lot of lives. I mean, even for our own family, my wife's brother went through YWAM training in Hawaii. So many people that I know have gone through YWAM training at one point of their life or another. And so many of them, you know, there's a lot of people, sometimes even in the Christian church, that I come across that kind of look down on short-term missions. But many of the missionaries, I would say the majority of them, if not all of them, that I work with today that have been on the mission field for 10, 20, 30, 40 plus years, started off as short-term missionaries. And many of those short-term missionaries got their very first vision experience and mission experience through YWAM. So their impact has been worldwide, and the impact is really incalculable, how many people have come to Christ as a result of that ministry. So as I saw that he had passed away earlier this week, you were one of the first people to come to mind that I felt would be able to share personal testimonies of, you know, working with Lauren, you know, from the very beginning and in the early days of the ministry of YWAM.
I think one quality that really is outstanding, and I think it's very important in Lauren's life, he was what I call kingdom-minded. He was not an empire builder. So many Christian leaders, they tend to become empire builders. They build their own kingdom instead of building the kingdom of God. And I remember a very good example of this is because, as I mentioned, that Lauren had a vision for a ship, which did not materialize. But later on, a ship on a starship became available. And then Don Stevens, who was really Lauren's lieutenant, he was became the leader of the Lausanne base in Switzerland. And he grabbed hold of that vision and got that ship released, and it became Mercy Ministry, a tremendous ship ministry with an ocean-going vessel, and that has been ministering in Africa for many, many years. And this ministry grew. But at one point, Don Stevens felt that in order to continue to grow, they needed to separate from YWAM, so they could really grow in a different direction. Don did this, but there were a lot of YWAM leaders that over the years they had contributed to the ministry, to the Mercy Ministry, the ship ministry. They had sacrificially given them. And they felt like this was a betrayal, you know, they were leaving YWAM, you know, how could you do such a thing, you know, leaving the family. So there was a lot of, many leaders had a lot of struggles. But Lauren's response was really remarkable. You know, even though it might have cost him pain, you know, to see, you know, his close friend Don Stevens separating from the ministry and moving on. But the first thing Lauren did was to call for an offering. And he called for an offering to bless Don Stevens and that ministry. And so he took up a huge offering for them. And that showed the heart. It was no competition, but, you know, he wanted to bless. And I remember when I saw that, it really touched my heart.
I love that. I love that his legacy is left in such a way. You know, so many well-known Christian leaders start strong, but maybe they don't always finish strong. And he really does have a testimony of someone who ran the race and ran it well.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And he took the Great Commission seriously. He had, by the year 2000, he had visited every nation on this planet and all more than 100 territories and islands. Go into all the world. He took it personally.
I love that. I think that we all identify with that here at Back to Jerusalem as well. Thank you so much, Ivan, for joining us and sharing with us about the experiences that you had with Lauren Cunningham. And my prayer is that those that listen to this podcast will remember him fondly, as many of the people there at YWAM I know will.
Yeah, he's one of the greatest leaders that I have had the privilege to meet.
Awesome. And I want to thank you for joining us for another Back to Jerusalem podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of China. God bless you.